Ladies and gentlemen, the George Wilder Jr. Show has now arrived. This is Chicago's finest internet radio show, making a world a better place, one show at a time. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. Take it away, Dad.
All right, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting out of Chicago. From my understanding, they're protesting downtown right as I speak live on the radio. I'm proud of this city, but, you know, some of the people who are in this city, live in this city, some who are leaders, call themselves leaders. Some people are just, in my estimation, it's just being, some African Americans are being led around by the nose by some of these so-called leaders of this city. But, you know, I'm just a radio host. I'm just talking about it. And there are some protests going on against Donald Trump, I'm pretty sure, of his Muslim ban. Some of these people aren't calling it a ban, but it's clearly a ban because some of them are still calling it a ban. You got to wonder if some of these people aren't confused. Donald Trump calls it a ban. Some of his, you know, surrogates and some of the people he placed in some of these positions are saying it's not a ban. And it is a ban. You know, these people are confused. They can't even keep up with their own lies. I mean, it's just phenomenal. And tomorrow is, okay, this is the last day of January 2017. Tomorrow is, from the date of this show, is the 1st of February. And on the 1st of February, I don't know if this is happening all over the United States or is it just happening in the city of Chicago, but one of the laws that's going to be in place starting tomorrow, February 1st, is that we are going to have to pay for our bags. Yeah, bags. I mean, if you're going shopping or at a department store, a grocery store, supermarket, if you want a bag, you're going to have to pay for it. Now, that is crazy. I mean, the city, if you want to say city, state, whatever, whoever is doing this, they're just nickel and diming the public. Okay, the bags are going to cost 7 cents. Okay, you got to, I mean, if you get 5 or 6 bags, that's going to add up. Okay, each 7 cents each for a bag. And if you think about it, you know, it may not be much to you to pay, much to you or me to pay 7 cents for a bag in the city of Chicago. But to the people who have put this law into place, who have implemented it and enforced it, it's going to be millions and millions of dollars in revenue for these people. You know, a nickel and, you know, I don't know what they're going to do with it. They're going to put it in some sort of fund or something. You never know what they're going to do with your money. But one thing for sure, they're going to take it. They figure out all kinds of ways to get into your pockets. This is what these people do. The politicians that we elect to this office, they spend hours and hours and hours on figuring out what you like, what you need, what you cannot live without, what you have to have, what are you doing, what are you can't help but to do, and they figure out a way to tax it. Anything that you need, if you need to do this or you need to do that and you have to have it, they're going to tax it. If you need to buy a bar of soap and they know you need to buy that bar of soap, they're going to tax it. Anything that you need, and now they're coming into our pockets, telling us we got to pay for a bag if we're going shopping. It doesn't matter. Anywhere around the around Chicago. I'm not sure if it's in other states or the towns, but I'm pretty sure if it's not in other states around America, it soon will be. It soon will be. And it's a damn shame. I mean, 7 cents to you or me, you know, going shopping for a bag, that's nothing. But like I just got through saying to the people who have implemented this, it's going to be millions and millions and millions of dollars for them to do whatever they want to do with it. And I trust no politician. I think they're all lies. I think they're all crooked. I think they're all liars, actually. And I think they're all crooked. And I think just after one thing is your and my money. Now, there's many times when I have gone into a store and I didn't have a bag. And some stores were charging you for bags even before this law was enacted. And there were times when I would go in the store, I wouldn't have a bag. I'd go buy groceries, you know, and walk up to the checkout counter, put all my stuff on the counter there, and she checks it out and then totals it all up. And suddenly she's saying, do you have any bags? I said, no, I don't have a bag. I said, how am I going to get this home without a bag? Well, we have bags. They're 20 cents a bag. You know, they're very expensive. In some places, bags cost more than 7 cents. You know, and then you have to buy a bag. And I said, what? And I've noticed some of my neighbors in my community, I mean, when they're rushing to the store, they have empty bags, you know, on their arms and things like that. But it's just crazy how these people are just nickel and diming us. And if you don't have a bag, you can't, how in the hell are you going to carry your groceries home or your stuff from the department store if you don't have a bag? They have bags there. They're going to sell them to you. But suppose they run out of bags, because people are going to be buying bags like hell, you know, and all of a sudden you get to the counter and there's no bags left and you can't even buy a bag. So you're stuck. They have no bags because they sold out, and you don't have a bag because you forgot to bring one. And that's another thing. We as consumers, we will forget to bring a bag in a minute. I mean, you're getting off work and you tell yourself before you get to your home or your apartment that you're going to stop off at the grocery store and pick up a few things and then go home after suddenly you get to the grocery store, you fill up your cart, you get to the checkout counter, the woman totals up your groceries, gives you the receipt, suddenly, and you pay with your credit card or debit card, suddenly you realize that you don't have any bags and they have ran out of bags. You're stuck. And like I've said before, a lot of us, once this law actually kicks in, you're going to be forgetting to bring a bag. I mean, there's so many times that I've gone to the store and I forgot to bring a bag. I just forgot it. So luckily for me, they had bags. You know, some people looking in the trash can for bags to put their groceries in. It's going to be chaotic, I think. I really do. I truly do. And it's not the fact that they are going to be giving out bags, reusable bags, tomorrow to everybody near the train stations. It's how we sometimes can forget to bring the bags, even though we may have them. Because sometimes you never know when you're actually going to stop at the store. Sometimes it's just a whim or just out of the blue. Wow, I'm going to the store and pick up a couple of pizzas, some soda, some donuts, some grits or whatever. And suddenly you don't have a bag, you know, and they've ran out of bags. You know, it doesn't really compute if they're going to give away bags tomorrow. We are in a fast paced world. But hopefully and luckily, once this once tomorrow comes and this law is totally in effect, hopefully wherever you're shopping, they will not run out of bags. Like I said before, folks, 7 cents is not that much. But for the people, the politicians, the government agencies who are collecting it, it's a windfall for these people. And that's all it is, a windfall. And some of these people, some of these politicians that you and I vote for sit around all day thinking about how to tax us to death. And that's all it is. Well, 7 cents is not much. 7 cents adds up. Let's say if you go to the store and you make $300 worth of groceries. How many bags are that? How many bags will it take to fill your groceries? 6, 7, 8, 9? It adds up, folks. It adds up. It adds up, and it's ridiculous that they are taxing. A lot of the politicians that we vote into office, the one of the things that a lot of them run for when they're campaigning is lowering taxes. Lowering taxes. And that's a real good vote getter, because we all want our taxes lowered. But these son of a bitches that we vote for to lower our taxes get in the office and end up raising our taxes, giving us these bogus excuses to why they're doing it, which we don't care anything about. Anything about. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. I've got to promote this show some kind of way. Here we go. Twitter, Facebook, Blog Talk Radio. All righty, here we go. All right, we're going to take a break right here, folks. We'll be right back. If you're just joining me, I was just talking about the bag tax. Yeah, the bag. They're going to be starting tomorrow, February 1st, 2017. We are going to start paying for bags. And if you're getting 4, 5, 6, or 7 bags, it's going to add. I'm not saying that we cannot pay 7 cents for a bag. That's mandatory. You know, I'm just saying it's ridiculous that the way these people tax us, nickel and dime us to death, because a 7 cents for a bag, and from millions and millions of people within this city, that's going to be a windfall. That's going to be something. you know, and like I've said, you know, I mean, if you're like me, if you're a penny pincher like I am, you're going to be loading up on bags from everywhere because you're going to be taxed to death. So every time you leave the house, if you have to go to the store, make sure you grab a bag. I mean, not because I think that you can't afford to pay 7 cents for a bag. It's because you never know when the store is going to run out of bags. Just as I just got through mentioned, you could, you know, go to the store and all the bags are sold out because people are rushing to buy bags, because if they know if they don't get no bags, they can't get their groceries out of that store, which is totally, totally ridiculous. And this should be there should be some sort of backlash on this. There should be probably rallies and protests against this, but I know that would be stupid. But yeah, it's just that the nickel and diming, the taxing of these taxes are just ridiculous. They're just ridiculous. It's just crazy. And I've said it a lot of times, many times actually, that we have to vote people in who we think have our best interest at heart, because the majority of these politicians, they do not. They think about themselves. Oh, they'll lie and spin and say that you are the one that's on their mind, that we the people are what they're about. They're, believe me, these, you know, please give me a break. Give me a break. You know, they are about themselves, their jobs, and their family. They're about nickel and diming us all over the fucking place. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. I do have a guest today, Angela G. I'm not going to destroy her last name because I'm a mess with last names. And if she should appear on the show today, she will tell us her last name. She's probably listening right now. Who knows? Anyway, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. Let's go. The weather, it is so great out there excuse me, I'm slipping over my tongue. The weather is so great out here. I mean, it is like 30, 38, 40 degrees or something in the city of Chicago. This is very mild for January into February type of weather that we're having. It's almost scary. But some parts of the state or some parts of the city, there have been lots of snow. But where I am, where I reside, my studio right here, there has been nothing. There have been flakes of snow, but nothing significant has fallen here. And I'm grateful for that. And I think a lot of my neighbors are grateful for that, too, because, you know, you got the meteorologists here. They're saying that we need snow. We need snow. We don't need no snow. I don't need any snow to be raking off my car. I don't need any snow to be shoveling my a driveway and the front of the house and all that kind of thing, or in front of your building, your apartment building. We don't need it. But these guys we need snow. We need snow. We're not getting snow. We need it. You need it. I don't need it. Stop saying I need it, including me in there with the plural we. I don't need it. Okay. If it comes, I will accept it. I will deal with it. But I really don't need any snow. Okay. I mean, my son loves it. I mean, he just wallows in it. You know, then he comes back in coughing and sniffling, and I have to give him some cold medicine. But I do love snow. I like the way it looks. It's white, fluffy. And I remember all those times when, you know, my friends and I, when I was small, we would have snowball fights. It was great. It was fun. So I do love snow. I think snow makes the city look, I think it's the snow makes the city look white and pretty. And it does. It does, especially when the weather is mild. But when it's cold as hell, 20 below zero, snow and ice is no fun, because we are going to be freezing our asses off. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Follow me on Blog Talk Radio. And I want to thank all those people out there who are following me, who are listening, and who are paying attention to what I'm trying to do and say. I want to thank those folks who have called in, emailed me, inboxed me, and told me that they thank me for all I do. I want to thank them for all they have done. And I do appreciate all the feedback that I get. Don't get me wrong. I get some negative stuff too. I mean, everybody is not all nice all the time, but in a genre like this, in a field like this, this is what you expect. I mean, when you're doing so much and trying to do so much and want to do so much, you're not always going to be liked. Everybody's not always going to agree with your point of view, and you're not going to always agree with their point of view. That's why I always say, we can always agree to disagree, or we can agree. And I've said this several times that I would rather have people disagree with me, and we can talk about it or chat about it or whatever, or debate it, because that's more fun than having people to always agree with you. I mean, when people agree with you, there's basically nothing else said. But when they disagree with you, there is a debate that you can have to hear their side of the issue versus my side of the issue. So it's always fun. But don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that I like it every time when somebody disagrees with me. I don't, because when I say something or write something, I'm always thinking that I'm telling the truth. I try to be above board on everything. And I've said this before about Donald Trump. I didn't vote for Donald Trump. I'm not a Republican. I'm not a Democrat. But now that he's in office, I do want him to be successful. It doesn't seem like it's going too well, but I do want him to be successful, because a lot of people say, you know, have mixed feelings about that. But I do want him to be successful, because him being successful means America is being successful. Is that happening right now? Is he being successful now? I don't think so. But I mean, hey, he's got 4 years in office. If he makes it that far to be successful. And when he's successful, I hope America is successful. Yeah, a lot of things he's doing is above board. They're doing it as they go. They're liars. And I mean, they're liars because they have been caught in many stories of untrue. And we just have to, hope for the best. You know, he's president. I didn't vote for him. Maybe some of you out there didn't vote for him either. But, so right now he's dealing with this immigration ban, Muslim ban. And, you know, so it's causing a lot of protests and rallies and a lot of chaos. But I don't know, you know, so I just want to say, everybody out there, be kind to one another and be nice. You know, stuff like that. I mean, Donald Trump, give him a chance. He might screw it all up, but give him a chance to try to work it all out. And, you know, and we're just going to have to go from there. All right. You've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. We will be right back.
It's time for Donald Trump to resign as president. Admittedly, it's been an interesting couple of days, but for any patriotic American capable of adding two and two and not getting 1.5 million, this is enough. If you voted for Trump or you support him now or you're saying give him a chance, again, I'm not going to yell at you or call you names. I'm not going to try to argue any policies. I'm not going to debate the size of his crowds nor whatever your conclusions are about Saturday's marches. In fact, I'm going to compliment you on your generosity toward him and the sincerity of your belief in his promises and your natural, your commendable desire to see him and thus see our country succeed. But this man is not of sound mind. In office, faster and more frighteningly than at any point in the campaign, over the span of just a long weekend, really, Trump has proved that not only will he lie to America about anything big or small, but that just as importantly, he will lie to himself about anything big or small. And more troubling yet, he will compel men, weaker even than himself, to lie on his behalf about anything big or small. And worst of all, the lies will convince some people, and they will convince one person, especially dangerous in particular, Donald Trump. Because what Trump does not believe cannot be true. And that way lies madness and lies every evil imaginable, including the end of this country in a literal sense, perhaps the end of civilization. Because like somebody who's strung out on drugs or somebody who's living in a complete dreamlike state caused by profound, pulsating narcissism, he will not believe that the outcome of any of his actions could be failure or disaster or even something that could be harmful to himself. A man who could accuse the Central Intelligence Agency of trying to undermine him and ask rhetorically of the conduct of that agency, quote, are we living in Nazi Germany? A man who could do that and then 10 days later go and stand in front of the shrine of its fallen agents and insist with a straight face, with every word he said and motion that he made suggesting he really believes this, he could say, quote, they sort of made it sound like I had a feud with the intelligence community, and I just want to let you know the reason you're the number one stop is it is exactly the opposite. A man who could insist to those same men and women at the CIA that it stopped raining the moment he started to give his inaugural address when you saw the rain falling on him. That is the kind of man who could convince himself that it would be just fine to start a nuclear war. Because, of course, he would survive the retaliatory attack, and so would his family, and so would whatever people he thinks are his friends, or to use his word, his fans. Of course they would all survive the retaliation because he's Donald Trump, and bad things cannot happen to Donald Trump. At the CIA, Trump told the agents there that he has, quote, a running war with the media. He does not have a running war with the media. He has a running war with reality. His reality is what he says it is. He has an advisor who came out and said Sunday that when you deliberately contradict reality, that that is not lying or deceiving, but rather that's using, quoting her, alternative facts. You try alternative facts in your life for 1 hour. Let me know how it goes. Drive on whichever side of the road you want to. Stop wearing the safety glasses. Let the kids use the stove and the power tools. Write checks for money you don't have. Because ignoring the warnings and instructions is not courting a disaster. It's just a set of alternative facts. This is crazy. And even if, God willing, it never gets to the point where this kind of delusional thinking is employed during an international crisis or here at home during some kind of threat or disaster, even if Trump's ability to turn off reality like a light switch never actually threatens us and our children and all we know, what does it mean about that key promise that he made to you to unrig the system, to level the playing field, to never be beholden to Goldman Sachs as he claimed his opponent was, like he promised? Like he seemed to promise before he hired three people from Goldman Sachs and one from Wells Fargo and one from Rothschild Investments. You knew this before that speech at the CIA or this crazy argument about how big the crowds at the inauguration were or whether it was sunny and only he could see. that it was Sonny. You may have even known this before you voted for him, and you just hoped it was going to go away when he took over. But it isn't going away. It's getting worse. He's crazy. We will all be lucky to survive having had him in charge. And even if we do survive, it will still be the greatest crisis of our lives, all our lives. Look, I don't want a President Pence, but I will take him and his policies. And I'll fight the policies, but the man, we can debate the man in 2020, in the election. This is not about policies or conservative or liberal or rigged systems or marches or making America great again. This is about a man not in his right mind who now has nuclear weapons. It is the greatest crisis of all of our lives right now. But together we can fix it peacefully. He just has to resign, or if he won't, there are provisions for the Republicans to remove him because he is so sick.
Well, Keith, I don't think he's going to resign. I don't think they're going to impeach him. I think we've stuck with him. All right. You've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. That was Keith Olbermann, one of my favorites. But sometimes I do disagree with him. But, you know, his heart is in the right place. I understand he loves America just like I do, just like you do. All righty. It's been it's very nice outside, folks. I'm just so giddy about the weather in February. Actually, February 1st is tomorrow. All right, let's go to the phones and see what we have. All righty, you're on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Go right ahead.
Hi, my name is Angela Guidolin.
Yeah, I know. I was expecting you. You're on my board here. I just did not want to say your last name because I'm not too, I don't want to mess it up. Okay, Angela.
Yeah, I heard you earlier. Well, it's an Italian surname.
All right. Tell us, you already told us your name. Tell us, give us a little bio and tell us about your, you're an author. Am I correct?
Yes. I'm a science fiction author. I'm okay. Italian. Yes, but I've been living in the south of England for a few years.
Okay. Give us a little bit of your bio and then tell us about your book.
Okay. Well, as I said, I'm Italian. After graduating in 1995, I left Italy. I went to London to polish my English, earn some work experience, and I met my future husband straight away. And in my book, I'm going to talk about the way I met him, and also the story reflects the struggles that I had to go through in my own life to follow
Angela,
my path. Yes.
You sound like you're nervous. Don't be nervous. I mean, just relax, okay? Just relax. Go right ahead.
Thank you. Well, yes, as I said, I went to London in 1935, and I met him straight away, and we fell in love. We were very different. We came from very different backgrounds, and but we decided to get married anyway. Our families were against it because, you know, it was too soon. They didn't know the person we wanted to marry. And because, you see, there were no social media at the time, so they couldn't do any checks or, and they had no contacts in London. So, you know, they really just had to trust us. And we know they wanted to protect us, but we were old enough. You know, I was 26, he was over 30. So we went ahead anyway. So we just told them that we were living together. After a year, we had the courage to tell them that we were already married. But they were happy, and they threw parties, you know, in Italy, in Algeria. So we had big celebrations after that. We had the courage to do it because we know that our parents loved us, and we could face our responsibilities, you know. But sometimes you must have the courage to disappoint the people you love, to follow your own path. And that's one of the themes of my book.
Okay, what is the title of your book?
It's titled Across Space-Time.
Okay. Is this your first book?
Well, I already published a short story 3 years ago, but it was in a magazine. Okay. So this is my first book by myself.
Do you plan on writing a second?
Yes, I'm already writing a sequel.
Oh, wow. Great. Do you have your book with you right now? Could you read us a small excerpt?
Yes, I can.
Thank you.
Well, the pre-sale will start on Friday, the 3rd of February, and the sale will start on the 31st of March. I'll give you a brief summary, otherwise you won't understand the piece. There are two main characters in my book. One is called Samir, and he is a Terran. And the second one is called Beatrice, and she's a progressive, which means that she lives beyond the asteroid belt. They are time travelers from the future, and they meet in London in 1995. This piece is narrated by Samir. Today is the big day. It's Sunday, and both Beatrice and I are off, so I've helped her finish moving in. Gosh, Beatrice, it looks like the Iraq invasion of Kuwait, I exclaim, once all her possessions are in our room. I told you I had loads of stuff, she says, wearing an impish smile. Never mind, we'll find a way to store everything. You are here now. That's what counts, I say, embracing her tenderly. Thank you for agreeing to give it a go. Thank you for asking. By the way, it is almost 6 now. Shall we get something to eat? Before I can reply, my swatch buzzes. Mom is requesting to see me. I click yes with my right thumb to take the video call and find myself a small clear spot on the bed where I can sit down. In the meantime, Beatrice leaves the room to go to the bathroom. Hello, Mom. You look very worried. Any problems? Yes. 44A has just informed me that you haven't resigned yet. What's going on? I roll my eyes and then murmur that I'm still deciding what to do because I'm in love with a progressive. A progressive? Are you out of your mind? She'll use you for a few weeks, and once you're addicted to her sexual practices, she'll throw you away. Her rage hits me like the energy of a star gone supernova. My cheeks are on fire and I cough a few times to recover from the shock. Excuse me, what are you talking about, Snap? I've seen many hollow films on progressives, you know. They don't care about other people's feelings. She'll destroy you and your career. But you don't even know her, I bellow and terminate the call. When I raise my eyes from the swatch, I see Beatrice standing in front of me. She's paler than usual and seems about to faint. I stand up quickly so that she can take my place on the bed. I'll never leave you. Mom will come round eventually. If she doesn't, it'll be her problem.
Wow, that sounds dramatic. That was great.
Thank you.
It was. I mean, I was mesmerized. I'm waiting for more, you know.
Well, you can get more, actually, because if you go to my website, on the front page, you know, the home page, you can just scroll down. At the bottom there is a form. You fill it in and you'll receive the first two chapters.
Wow, that's great. Okay, we're going to do that. I'm going to ask you about that again later on. But I wanted to ask you right now, is any part of this story based on experiences from your real life?
Yes. A part of the time travel side.
Okay. All right.
Yes. So as I said before, you know, I met my husband in London. Mm-hmm. So what I describe in the book is really, in the first part of the book, is really my own experience. Like when Beatrice looks for a job, for example, and
So it's not that much like an autobiography because it's actually science fiction.
It is
time
yes.
traveling. Is it more about time travel? Is it more about time traveling than relationships, or vice versa?
No, it is more about relationships. It's about standing up for what we feel is right. It's about finding our own path, you know, having the courage to disappoint the people we love. And because, you see, what I've realized, you know, I had to make many tough choices in my life. And I've realized that before making them, I had to deal with two issues. The first one is, you know, usually you have just two choices. And one, you think, what is the best outcome? You know, what is the successful outcome? And then I had to understand if that outcome fulfilled my expectations or if it fulfilled other people's. And usually, you know, it's your loved ones, your parents. And, you guess it. Most of the times I realized that that outcome didn't ring true to me. So it wasn't what I wanted in life. So then there was the second part, you know. You have others to accept it and disappoint yourself and feeling guilty because you've disappointed yourself, or disappoint your loved ones and feel guilty because you've disappointed them. So it's not easy. But if you want to have a happy life without regrets, and mind you, taking your own responsibilities all the time. You know, you have to have the courage to be yourself.
Yeah. Angela, so, do you, how, in general, how do you feel about writing? Do you, I mean, have you grown to love it? Have you grown to, have you found out that writing is what you are going to be doing in the near future?
Yes. Yes, I love it. You know, but when I was little, I never thought I would become a writer.
Yeah.
But in 2000, I was in London. I was feeling very sick at the time. I could hardly lift fork. I had the tarot reading, and I was told that I would write a book.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, okay, maybe one day. No idea what to write about.
Yeah.
And then, you know, life just decide for you most of the time.
Yeah.
You know, what happens.
Yeah, life decides for you. You're right. Life will tell you what to write. And I'm a writer also, and I'm a published author also. So I know how it is when it comes to writing, because I do it because I love it. I mean, I actually do it because I love it. I love it when other people read what I write, and inspires me to keep on writing. Have you been inspired to keep on writing?
Yes, because, you know, especially the first time I had my story published 3 years ago, you know, I cried 5 minutes. I don't know if you did the same, but when I received the email, the acceptance email, I cried 5 minutes.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. They loved my story, you know, like I did.
You know what? The first time I cried when I received a check for my writing, some money. I said, oh, Lord.
Lucky you.
It's fun to get paid, you know. All right. Go ahead.
No. Carry on.
Okay. Have you ever suffered writer's block, or how do you deal with that?
I do housework. I found that, you know, ironing is the best because I clear my mind and the answers just come. They flow.
Okay. If someone else, I mean, there's a lot of people out here who want to write, and some people are just, they are afraid to write, and some people put writing off, but they want to write. How would you inspire someone to start writing or to keep on writing?
Well, to start with, you have to make it a habit, really. You know, you write every single day. And I would just tell them, you know, join creative writing creative writing courses. To meet other, you know, fellow writers, people that love the craft and, you know, share stories. And that's already inspiring. And then you have feedback in a safe environment because you are all aiming to get to be better writers. You know, there is no competition. So then you learn to accept feedback.
Yeah.
And
You do.
Probably, you know, this is the same thing. Yeah. Sorry. It happens to you. In the beginning, you're scared. And then you just, if people tell you, oh, yeah, everything is fine, you're disappointed and you think that doesn't help me.
Okay. All right, Angela, tell everybody where they can find your books and tell everybody where your websites are and what we can do and download those three chapters. Go right ahead.
Two chapters. Yes, okay. My website is www.angelaguidolinauthor.co.uk. So that's my name, author.co.uk. Shall I spell it as well?
Yeah, spell it.
Okay, so www.angelaguidolin, which is G for golf, U for uniform, I for India, D for Delta, O for Oscar, L for Lima, I for India, N for November, author.co.uk. And they can find me on Facebook on www.facebook.com/AngelaGuidolinAuthor.
Okay.
Or on Twitter, my handle is Guidolin_Angela.
All right, great. That sounds wonderful, beautiful. I want, you know what I want to do? I want to send you a link to this show, the link to this particular show that you are on, that you are doing. And you can take this link to this show where you are doing and put it up on your website. So when people come by your website or your blog, they can listen to you on this show. Would you like a link to this show, to this particular show that you are on now?
Of course. Thank you very much.
No problem. I will email it to you in about three to four, maybe 5 hours once the show processes. And I will email you this link and you can, you know, do whatever you want with it and basically embed it into your website or your blog or whatever. And they can come, whoever comes by your website can listen to you on the show with a click. Just click on. All right. Thanks for being on the show. Great. You were great.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
No problem. I knew you were nervous at the start, but don't be nervous. It's not a show to be nervous on. You just, you know, come on and have fun. Come on and have fun. You know what I'm saying? And I hope to have you back.
Well,
one day.
I had fun. Thanks. I had fun.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
No problem. All right. The George Wilder Jr. Show will be taking a break right here. Let's see what we can do here. What about this? Obama accomplishments. Do you think he really had any?
Congratulations, Mr. President.
Barack Obama has had a busy first 7 years as president. So in this video, I'm just going to lay out all the things his administration has been able to accomplish. President Obama kept his biggest campaign promise and ended the Iraq War. And he kept the homeland extremely safe, unlike his predecessor who allowed a massive terrorist attack against both our largest city and our capital. President Obama also prohibited the use of torture, which had been rampant under Bush. He created the New START Treaty with Russia to reduce each country's nuclear weapons arsenal. A year after his inspiring A New Beginning speech in Cairo, young people armed only with smartphones and laptops took to the streets in the Arab Spring uprising in Egypt that quickly spread throughout the region. Obama supported the revolutions by ushering Mubarak out of power and protecting the Libyan people from the genocidal madman Muammar Gaddafi. A similar call for change in Syria turned into a devastating civil war, with Bashar al-Assad committing war crimes against his own people, including using chemical weapons on civilian population centers, But instead of involving the American people in another ground war or bombing the Syrians, Obama used these credible threats of force and tireless diplomatic efforts of John Kerry to convince the Russian-backed Assad to give up his chemical weapons stockpile completely. President Obama authorized numerous covert U.S. special operations missions to rescue American hostages, including the infamous nighttime operation at sea to save Captain Phillips from Somali pirates. When it became clear the American public was uncomfortable with the reach of the NSA, Obama reformed it to more clearly conform to the Constitution. Obama has gradually reduced the number of U.S. troops in Afghanistan to around 10,000, officially ending the American-led war in 2014 in favor of an Afghan-led, NATO-supported coalition. He drastically reduced the number of civilian casualties caused by U.S. airstrikes in the Middle East by using a smarter, more accountable targeting and authorization protocol. He also ordered a shift to mostly unmanned aircraft, a strategy that both saved money and removed American airmen from the dangers of the battlefield. In 2011, President Obama ordered SEAL Team 6 to carry out the daring mission that killed Osama bin Laden in Abbottabad, Pakistan. Working through UN Ambassador Susan Rice, the president helped negotiate the peaceful, diplomatic splitting of civil war-torn Sudan into two independent countries. He committed the United States to the UN's Sustainable Development Goals. Through his pivot to Asia, the president reaffirmed America's commitment to ensuring the region stays peaceful and healthy economically. This pivot included more cooperation with emerging powerhouse China on a whole range of issues, while candidly addressing differences on human rights, cybersecurity, and the South China Sea. Key to this pivot is the Trans-Pacific Partnership, a 12-country agreement representing nearly 40% of global economic output, to increase American trade with the fastest-growing region in the world, and also to blunt China's desire for a less fair playing field among its neighbors. Obama ended the 50-year embargo of Cuba, normalizing relations with the island nation, reopening the U.S. Embassy in Havana, and visiting the country with his entire family. After Vladimir Putin annexed Crimea from Ukraine, the U.S. used sanctions to punish Russia for violating international law, weakening Russia's economy. Then, after reinforcing Ukraine with arms and financial aid, Obama bolstered NATO's collective defenses and gave a powerful speech in Warsaw's Castle Square on America's unwavering commitment to the security of its NATO allies in Eastern Europe. When Ebola was overwhelming health workers in Africa and threatening to become a pandemic, Obama rapidly deployed American assets to West Africa, including thousands of American military personnel, coordinating a global effort that quickly won the struggle against the outbreak. The president developed a strategy to lead a 65-member coalition to degrade and destroy ISIL, the terrorist group that had gained strength from the chaos of 12 years of war in Iraq and Syria. After years of painstaking work to bring Iran to the negotiating table, the Obama administration, led by Secretary of State John Kerry, reached a deal to stop the Iranians from acquiring a nuclear weapon. This prevented a nuclear arms race in the Middle East and kept America's strongest ally in the region safe. After taking office at the depths of the Great Recession, Obama pushed the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act through Congress, which created over 2 million jobs and jump-started an economic recovery that has now produced a record 65 consecutive months of overall job growth, with unemployment steadily falling below 5%. A firm believer in teamwork, he put Vice President Joe Biden in charge of managing the stimulus, which was praised for its extraordinary lack of waste. With millions facing foreclosure and homelessness at the height of the crisis, Obama and the Democratic Congress took measures to help many stay in their homes. And because states were cutting their budgets back, hundreds of thousands of teachers and first responders were about to be fired, but the Recovery Act and other measures stopped this from happening. With General Motors on the verge of collapse, the president made the risky decision to save it, and probably the nation's auto industry as well. That meant 1 million people kept their jobs. And last year, GM finished repaying its loan, returning to its rightful place among the world's leading car companies. Working closely with other world leaders, particularly the European Union, Obama prevented their economies from collapsing too during the economic downturn. He also led the successful effort to get the world's wealthiest countries to create a $100 billion World Bank fund to support developing countries' access to credit during the crisis. After the Bush bank bailout, the Obama administration forced Wall Street to pay all the money it borrowed back, with an additional $30 billion in interest, and then he put in place the strongest Wall Street regulation since the Great Depression, which gave the government a whole host of tools to prevent another Wall Street-caused economic crisis. The Obama Justice Department's investigation of financial crimes resulted in big banks paying more than $200 billion in fines back to the American people. In the ultra-competitive global economy, Obama has been relentless in promoting the effectiveness of the American worker, convincing companies like Apple to bring jobs back to the U.S. Even China's largest manufacturer, Foxconn, will build a factory in Pennsylvania. The president protected consumers from predatory practices like unfair payday loans and credit card deals, and created the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which was set up by now Senator Elizabeth Warren. He cut taxes for the bottom 95% of Americans to their lowest levels since the 1950s, increased funding for food stamps by $20 billion to make sure no one in America starves, provided affordable child care to working families, modernized labor standards, and reformed job training programs to make them more relevant to the 21st century economy. With all this, Obama has proven that taking care of the poor and working class doesn't hurt the economy one bit, and today, the stock market is stronger than it's ever been, with the S&P 500 and Dow Jones more than doubling and the NASDAQ tripling since he took office. After the Bush administration's mismanagement ran up the annual budget deficit, President Obama's team has been able to cut it by two-thirds. Largely thanks to Obama's energy policies, the average price for a gallon of gas in America is around $2 now. More than 13 million new jobs have been created during the Obama presidency, with the economy growing nearly 10% overall since he took office. That's double the growth seen by the average country in the rest of the industrialized world. As a candidate for president, Barack Obama promised to reform America's healthcare system. In 2008, that system was broken, with tens of millions of Americans unable to afford expensive private health insurance, a staggering number of whom were simply denied treatment they couldn't pay for and died. With the Affordable Care Act, President Obama and the democratically controlled Congress put an end to all that, and today, just over 2 years after people began signing up for Obamacare, around 20 million people have gained health coverage who didn't have it before. The president ended Bush's restrictions on embryonic stem cell research too, allowing federal funding for these projects to make significant medical advances. He also signed the first comprehensive improvements for the lives of Americans living with paralysis, authorized the FDA to regulate tobacco companies, forced chain restaurants to add calories to their menus, and oversaw the most sweeping food safety legislation in 75 years. Inspired by the Human Genome Project, the Obama administration launched the Brain Initiative to better understand the human brain and to solve the mysteries behind brain disorders like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, depression, and traumatic brain injury. He used the Stimulus Act to invest $18 billion in scientific research and opened up space to the competitive private sector, igniting a now booming private industry. He used $8 billion to expand access to broadband internet for poor and rural families, sped up deployment of a more comprehensive broadband infrastructure for the whole country, supported a free and open internet through net neutrality, greatly increased the government's ability to deal with cyber threats, set up a national strategic computing initiative to maximize the benefits of high-performance computing research, development, and deployment. And he created the White House Science Fair, which he always attends, to encourage kids to focus on the STEM subjects. So for good reason, President Obama is sometimes called the scientist-in-chief, and nowhere is that more appropriate than on energy and the environment. He has doubled spending on clean energy research, created tax incentives to boost adoption of electric cars, doubled the distance gasoline-powered cars will go on a gallon by 2025, partnered with the private sector to improve energy efficiency on a massive scale, and guided a nearly threefold increase in wind power capacity and a 30-fold increase in solar energy capacity. The U.S. government is now investing in research and development for biofuels, offshore wind, wave, and nuclear fusion energy, and its embrace of natural gas has helped cut U.S. dependence on foreign oil to its lowest rate since 1985, putting the country firmly on the path toward energy independence. President Obama set the first ever limits on CO2 emissions from power plants, limited mercury emissions and other toxic air pollutants, and introduced rules to limit methane emissions. And back at the start of his term, when the Deepwater Horizon offshore oil rig exploded in the Gulf of Mexico, sending millions of gallons of oil gushing out, Obama's government, in an unprecedented move, made BP pay $20 billion into a fund for victim compensation and environmental cleanup. The administration protected 260 million acres of America's public lands and water, more than any other presidency in history, strengthened the Endangered Species Act, and increased funding for national parks and forests. The president closed a deal with China to limit its carbon emissions for the first time, laying the groundwork for the historic worldwide agreement in Paris to fight climate change. And in a similar agreement, the Brazilians committed to reforesting an area of the Amazon that's roughly the size of Pennsylvania. And Obama made good on his commitment to the Paris Climate Agreement by making a $500 million payment to the Green Climate Fund, the first of more than $3 billion in contributions America will ultimately make to help poor countries deal with climate change. The Obama administration has invested heavily in reforming America's lagging educational performance at the K-12 level. He started off by ending Bush's much-criticized No Child Left Behind law and instead created Race to the Top, which encourages states to come up with the most effective school reforms, and coordinated the states in their creation of higher Common Core standards, so students are better prepared for success in college and the 21st century global economy, where science, math, and computer programming skills are becoming increasingly important. His team also greatly expanded family access to early childhood education, funded the construction of new schools all over the country, expanded K-12 students' access to the internet in their classrooms, signed the post-9/11 GI Bill to improve veterans' access to higher education, expanded the Pell Grants program so more low- and middle-income kids could afford college, enacted reforms so graduates pay lower interest rates on their student loans, protected students from being deceived by for-profits like the University of Phoenix that are often very ineffective, and created a new college rating system that emphasizes value over prestige. President Obama cut maximum drug sentences for current and future prisoners, paving the way for the first drop in the federal prison population in 32 years, and became the first sitting president in American history to visit a federal prison, holding a meeting with six inmates. After several executions were mishandled, Obama ordered a review of the death penalty process. He limited the amount of military-style equipment local police departments could acquire, and encouraged the widespread use of body-worn cameras on police officers, which has allowed for unprecedented officer accountability and, thanks to a now constant stream of videos, has led to a national conversation about excessive use of force, especially against people of color. He signed the Blue Alert Law to provide police officers in the field with access to critical information when their lives are threatened. And after Congress failed to act to prevent gun violence after massacre, Obama used executive orders to promote safer gun technology, improve the background check system in several key areas, and set up a task force to figure out what other measures can be taken to limit gun violence. And when Congress wouldn't act on immigration either, the president concentrated enforcement on those who committed crimes, streamlined the visa process for those who want to come here legally, increased border security to make it much more difficult for people to cross into the United States illegally, and worked hard to lay the political groundwork for comprehensive immigration reform that almost passed, although Republicans in Congress were ultimately able to block it. Throughout his presidency, Obama has put veterans first. The most obvious example is by ending the two wars that had resulted in a tragic number of service members dying and suffering life-altering injuries. But he also decreased homelessness among veterans by 36%, decreased the veteran unemployment rate from a post-9/11 peak of 12% to just over 4% today, increased funding for the Department of Veterans Affairs by 33%, hired more than 1,600 additional mental health professionals, and improved access to VA healthcare, reducing average wait times to 4 days for primary care, 5 days for specialty care, and 3 days for mental health care. On civil rights, President Obama signed and implemented the Hate Crimes Prevention Act. He reversed the military's Don't Ask, Don't Tell ban on gays, came out in favor of same-sex marriage, then won a landmark Supreme Court decision legalizing it nationwide. He made affordable housing available to more people, appointed the first ever special assistant to the President for Disability Policy, established the White House Council on Native American Affairs, cracked down on companies that were abusing the independent contractor employee classification system, and strengthened rules prohibiting discrimination against pregnant workers. And the first bill signed into law by President Barack Obama was the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act that strengthened rights for workers who suffered pay discrimination. President Obama also seated the third and fourth female justices in the history of the U.S. Supreme Court, including the first Justice Sotomayor of Hispanic heritage. Another one of his first moves as president was launching We the People, which gave Americans a way to create and sign online petitions to get the White House's attention on issues. On day one, Obama signed a memo that began a new era of open and accountable government. He launched data.gov to give the public easy access to government information, increased tracking of how the federal government spends its money, and launched challenge.gov, a website where citizens can submit innovative solutions to challenges presented by government agencies, elected officials, and private businesses. And in order to root out misspent tax dollars, Obama created the Government Accountability and Transparency Board. One of the most important but undervalued aspects of the presidency of Barack Obama is that he restored integrity to the White House after back-to-back administrations became mired in scandal. Over and over again, the president, with indispensable First Lady Michelle and the wise and loyal Vice President Joe Biden by his side, chose highly qualified, decent people to work in his administration. And he led by example, coming to work each day squarely focused on tirelessly tackling the problems he was elected to solve. He never lost the trust of his supporters, allowing him to maintain the momentum and credibility needed to achieve significant accomplishments well into his final 2 years in office, a time when most presidents are ineffective lame ducks running out the clock on their term. Obama will leave office with an approval rating over 50%, a remarkable number for such an active presidency, and a figure that will grow as historians judge his time in office favorably, especially compared to his Republican predecessor. The United States was facing a catastrophic economic collapse when Barack Obama took office. Still, expectations were historically high for the charismatic Illinois senator, who became the first African-American president after emerging with a campaign.
You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, the talk of our times. This is the talk of our times on Block Talk Radio, the Wilder Network.
Once again, I want to thank my guest author. She was so sweet. I want to thank my guest author, Angela Gudelian. Okay, I may have screwed up her last name, but basically, if I got the syllables correct, that should be close. Okay, she was great. She was wonderful. And tune into the George Wilder Jr. Show Monday through Thursday, 6 o'clock to 7:30, and listen constantly. You'll find some very interesting people have been on the show, will be on the show, and I am so proud of that. I am so proud of that. Okay. As I was talking about earlier into the show, that Chicago is going to see a bag. Yeah, we're going to be paying 7 cents starting tomorrow as of the date of this show. Okay, if you're listening to the show later on, you'll know that this show is dated on January 31st. Causing February 1st to be the following day, tomorrow. And that is when the bag tax will kick in. Why am I harping on 7 cents a bag? Because it's not just 7 cents a bag. It's nickel and diming the taxpaying public. Because 7 cents for the people who are enacting this tax is going to be a windfall, millions, maybe billions of dollars. And we in the city of Chicago, we have been taxed up the kazoo. I mean, totally up the kazoo. And we're fed up. We just are fed up. And, you know, and like I've stated earlier, I mean, a lot of us are going to forget to take bags to the store when we go shopping. Because we're not used to it. It's something new, you know. It's something new that we will have to get used to. We're gonna make a lot of those mistakes because sometimes I forget to take bags to the store right now, not because I can't afford a 7 cents bag. It's just that I don't want to give these people any more of my tax money, you know, because that's what it's all about. And my understanding, they're going to be out there tomorrow in some of these in front of the CTA and some other places giving out free bags, reusable bags, which is going to be good for some people. But still in all, you can give out all the bags you want. That's not going to stop somebody from forgetting to take a bag out to the store as they go shopping, or and then find out that the bags that they are supposed to be selling for 7 cents and sometimes 11 cents are sold out. And then you're stuck at the counter with all those groceries and no bags to put your groceries in. That's a bummer. You know, that's a bummer. And it's just heartening. Yeah. George, why are you bitching about a 7 cents bag? Because it's hardship on people. I think that's hardship on people. I mean, you get off work and you decide, well, I don't want to go home and get no bag. I'm going straight to the department store. You know, you go buy a buggy full of groceries, push cart full of groceries. You get to the counter. Suddenly you discover you don't have any bags to put your groceries in. The counter, at the counter, they didn't sold out of bags. So you're stuck with a lot of groceries with no bags. You know, things going to happen. Things are going to happen. And then, you know, folks are going to forget to bring those reusable bags, and they're going to still be purchasing bags for 7 cents or 11 cents. Even though they got bags at home, but they are not in the vicinity. They're not in the vicinity of being able to grab those bags. So they're going to be paying 7 cents after 7 cents. And I mean, when you go grocery shopping, I mean, you're going to get at least $200-$300 worth of groceries at some point, you know, and you're going to be using how many bags? 7 to 10 bags to put those. That adds up. For the county, the city, whoever is enacting these taxes. And I really don't give a damn who's enacting them. All I know is it's coming out of my pocket. It's going to come out of your pocket. And especially in the city of Chicago, a city that has the highest taxes in America. And yet they're constantly putting this shit on us, you know, as if we can pay. You know, I have no problem with it, but I know that there's a lot of people out there who will. And I think it's totally unfair, but these people act, well, you know, they're raising these taxes. And the kicker is that a lot of times when these folks raise these taxes, they claim that they're raising taxes for your own benefit. It's going to be good for you that they've raised these taxes. The BS. How in the hell is it good for me for you to be taking money out of my pocket? Money I earn, money I have bills and a family to take care. How is that helping me? Yeah, they're going to spend it. They're going to spend it any way that they want to spend it. But every time they, even with some of these red light cameras around that used to be around, they spun that. We're trying to save lives. Trying to save lives, my ass. That's money. That was money generated for the city of Chicago. They do things to con us, to fool us, to lie to us, to make us think that they're raising taxes to benefit us. How is raising my property taxes is benefiting me when I got to pay more money? And I'm not getting a raise at work. I can't seem to win the lottery. Why is raising my taxes is so beneficial for me? It's not. It's beneficial for the people, the government agency that is raising the taxes. And that's all it's about. I mean, if you think about it, folks, society is geared to going in your pockets. Because they figure they can go in your pockets anytime they want. You vote for these people. You vote for these people. And once they get into office, first of all, you vote for them because they promise they are never going to raise taxes. They're never going to do this. And suddenly, bing, they raise taxes. And they do it unmercifully. They don't care. You know, they don't care about you bitching and protesting. And moving out of the city, moving out of the state, you know, taking your taxes, take tax dollars with you, because that's what's happening. People are moving out of the state, moving out of the city. One of the reasons beside crime is high taxes. I mean, if everybody who can afford to pay these taxes that these folks are enacting move out of the city of Chicago, they will have no taxes to collect. You have to watch what you're doing. I mean, I've said this before. I think Chicago is becoming the fourth largest city in America. Instead, once a level down from being the third, because people are moving. But the politicians and the so-called leaders of Chicago, they're not going to tell you that. They don't want you to think that. They want you to be in the dark about that. But this bag tax, folks, is just, I think it's ridiculous. And I'm not bitching because I can't afford to pay for it. I mean, 7 cents is 7 cents, you know, but still in all, it's a tax. That's what I'm beefing about, that it's a tax. It's another tax on the people of Chicago. And they figure that, you know, they figure like me that 7 cents is not going to hurt anybody. Probably not. But still, it's a tax. The bottom line, it's another tax that they hope that we don't bitch about because it's only 7 cents or it's only 11 cents. But there is a problem, and I've discussed it earlier on into the show, and I just got through saying some things about it. There is a problem. But like I said before, you know, I mean, if you're going to live in Chicago, you can't help but to pay these ridiculous and awful taxes that they keep throwing at us every year, every 6 months. They give these screwed up excuses for raising your taxes. They're always promising, we're not going to raise taxes. We're going to protect the middle class. And suddenly, these assholes are raising taxes. And they campaign on not raising taxes. For one, Tony Preckwinkle. You know, well, folks, we have to do what we have to do. You know, I think people should start, you know, protesting and rallying against these high ass taxes that seem to always hit us from out of nowhere. You know, they have this tax called the soda tax or the sugar tax or whatever. You know, now they're taxing sugar beverages, anything that's sweet, Coke, soda pop, anything. They are taxing. I think it's a 12 cent, 14 cent tax on some of this stuff. I mean, it's ridiculous. And they say the reason behind that is they're trying to stop people from getting diabetes. Give me a break. Another weak ass excuse for taxing Chicagoans to death. And they think we're stupid and dumb because we're going to buy their excuses. This is about them. This is not about us, you know. And we're going to have to stand up to these people raising our damn taxes and making up weak excuses to do it as if we're dumbasses and we're going to buy what they say. Most politicians think because they're politicians that we should believe everything that they tell us, to harp on everything that they say. Give me a break. As if we don't know anything or if we can't think for ourselves. I've said this before. Stop letting these people, these crooked ass people who call themselves leaders and politicians, think for you. Think for yourself. They're counting on you not being able to think so they can try to put their ideology on you or their crazy crap on you. And you, just because this person is a leader or that person, leaders aren't perfect. And everybody, you know, is not a leader who claim to be a leader. Scams are all over the place, folks. Scams, you got some leaders pretending to, like, they care about you and care about your life and care about this. They don't give a damn about you. They care about their own bottom line. They're using you. using you and your situation to make money off that, or to get attention, or to be on television. They're using you for that. You know, so you got to watch some of these so-called leaders. You know, they're not about you. They're about themselves, getting attention for themselves, getting their face on television, acting as if they care about your situation. They don't give a damn about your situation. They care about themselves, elevating themselves, using you to do it. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. This is the talk of our times. And we are in some dark times, folks, and I just want to do this. All right, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio out of the city of Chicago, the state of Illinois. Folks, we are in some trying times. We are in some dark times. We must fight for an America without hate. We must fight for an America without bigotry. We must fight for an America without racism. We must fight for our rights. We must fight to continue to be Americans. Some of those rights are being threatened, taken away. But we have to get out here and fight the good fight. You know, and it has to be done, folks. It has to be in a non-violent way. We know how to do things non-violently. So let's go out and make our voices heard, fighting non-violently. As I speak, Trump is now Donald J. Trump, the president of the United States, as I speak, is now introducing his Supreme Court pick for the Supreme Court of the United States. Yep, he is now doing it, and everybody has been waiting on, they've been waiting like hell for him to do it. And, you know, Trump, I think, is doing too much, too quick, too fast. He's doing so much. He's doing a lot of things without thinking. He's doing a lot of things without telling people what he's doing, and springing all of this on you and surprising you with a lot of this signing, this executive order signing. I don't think I've ever seen any president in the history of the United States sign as many executive orders as Trump has. Obama was always reluctant to sign them. He didn't. He was reluctant, especially if it was something pertaining to African Americans. He was always reluctant to sign anything. But Trump, this guy, this man, I mean, he's living a life of Riley in the White House, signing these executive orders. He's doing too much too fast. And then when it comes back to Biden, he and his minions or his thugs, they have to reshape and try to, you know, get it out there to the media as quick as hell that they, you know, didn't actually know what they were doing. And I think Trump is just learning, learning about the job as he goes. I think they're doing, everything is piecemeal. If they screw up, they mess up, they'll make up some excuse to let the public know that they, you know, didn't screw up, but, they're backtracking. And that's what happens when you do too much stuff without thinking. You're going to make a lot of mistakes. And the Trump administration don't want to admit mistakes. They're going to try and spin it and turn it around as if it's the fault of someone else. And that's one of the scapegoats of politics. You screw up, blame somebody else. You want something done and it's not being done and it's your fault, but blame somebody else. You know, politics is just not just a dirty sport. It's just a mean and evil kind of a sport that we have now. And it just makes you sick to the stomach that you are part of this and that you're witnessing all of this. But like I've said before, you got to stand up for what you believe in. You got to stand up for, you got to fight for what you want. A lot of these protests out here, they have been beneficial. A lot of these people have been successful at what they're doing. And there's a lot of people who are pissed off. Who cares? a lot of people who are totally pissed off. And like I said, who cares? If you think what you're doing is right and correct, do not care what other people think. I mean, I've said it before. I mean, you know, I've been called a lot of names. I've been called a jewel. I've been called, people have been saying, hey, thank you for what you do, George. What you do is good. And I've been called an idiot. I mean, you know, but I don't let none of it, good or bad, you know, affect me. I'm going to be and do what I want. I'm going to be and do and say and write what I want. There are some people out there who are not going to like it. They can go straight to hell. I'm going to keep doing what I do because I love what I do. I enjoy what I do. I've helped a number of people along the way. And I've been thankful for it. And they have thanked me for it. All right. You've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. We're just about off the air, folks. I think we've got about 4 more minutes left into the show. 3. It's just ticking away. I've had a lot of fun on the show today and I love doing it. I have had a lot of fun on the show, and I want to thank everybody who participated. And thank everybody who pissed listeners, you listeners out there, and listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. And because this is a good show, if you're going to listen to anybody, listen to me, because you'll learn a lot listening to me. It's a fun show, and I've always said that from the first show that I've ever done.
Bombs begin to fall. Heaven help the black man if he struggles one more day. Heaven help the white man if he turns back away. Heaven help the man who kicks the man who has a crawl.
All right, I want to thank everybody for listening to the George Wilder. Someone just whispered 10 seconds. Thanks for listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Join me tomorrow. I will be back, folks, and thank you so much. Bye-bye.